Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, February 11th, 2019. A civil society activist accuses South Sudan's army and rebel fighters of violating the cessation of hostilities agreement.
There is complete violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement of December 2017, and there is also the violation of the revitalized agreement in Yale. And this manifests itself in several ways.
And hundreds of former child soldiers face an emotional toll in South Sudan.
In South Sudan, we find that most of the communities are very poor. They have been exposed to conflict, and therefore families sometimes are not ready to support the children who have been associated with armed conflict or child soldiers.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A member of the civil society group who signed the revitalized peace deal on behalf of the South Sudan civil society groups says three warring parties have been violating the cessation of hostilities agreement that was signed in December of 2017. Wajab Mohandas says the South Sudan People's Defense Forces continue to fight with rebels of the National Salvation Front on the outskirts of Ye Town. And he says that's a violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement signed by the government and the National Salvation Front.
There is complete violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement of December 2017, and there is also the violation of the revitalized agreement in Yale. And this manifests itself in several ways. One is military confrontations that involves the National Salvation Front on one side and the South Sudan People's Defense Force on the other. And there are also issues to do with harassment, abductions, and killing of civilians. So all this amounts to violations of this agreement.
You've been to Ye. That's my understanding, that you were in Ye, you visited the town and spoke to people. What did the people tell you?
Well, the people said at first when the agreement was signed, the revitalized agreement was signed in September last year, it brought some hope to them and they thought things would change. And in fact, the situation was getting a little better. But since December, there have been road ambushes, there have been fighting and attacks on civilians. And so the situation is bad. In town, yes, people move around a little freely. But outside the town, there's active combat and also restrictions on movements of civilians. And the civil population is getting increasingly worried and scared of the unfolding situation in Yale.
And who are in control of the rural areas that's outside town, as you put it? Who is in control of those areas?
Well, we talked a lot to the civil population. We talked to the different stakeholders, and we're told that in the outskirts of the town, there are different forces. There are forces of the National Salvation Front, there are forces of the SPLA in opposition, and also there are government forces that move to some of the locations. So there are multiple forces in Ye, and it is not easy to determine specifically who is where.
And when this fighting is taking place right now in Ye, who is fighting who? You said it is the government fighting the National Salvation Front, but you also mentioned that the rebels of the SPLA-IO are in the area. So who is fighting who?
Well, the understanding from the discussions we held with people in Ye, the government forces and the forces of the SPLA in opposition managed to use the peace agreement signed in September 2018 to normalize relations. And so as it stands now, it's quite unlikely that there will be confrontations between government forces and forces of the SPLA in opposition. So the only fighting that one would, from the discussions we had in Ye, the only fighting happens between government forces and forces of the National Salvation Front. And yes, there is a possibility that government forces and SPLA-IO could collaborate in this respect. However, we were not able to establish that exactly.
You are one of the signatories of the cessation of hostility agreement signed in December 2017. You are also a signatory of the revitalized peace agreement that was signed in September of last year. How do you feel? Your signature is on these documents that nobody respects. How do you feel?
Well, my signature on these documents is the signature of the civil society. And so I was able to discuss this extensively with colleagues in the civil society, and we agreed to engage with the different stakeholders, the government and the different opposition groups, to ensure that they respect the agreements that have been signed, they respect the rights of civilians in Yei to move freely, and they respect the provisions of the agreement to protect civilians so that civilians do not become targets of the fighting, and that these fightings actually stop so that people use dialogue to address any outstanding grievances.
That is Rajab Mohandas, a member of the South Sudan Civil Society Group and a signatory of the revitalized peace deal. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Kampala, Uganda, this past hour. UNICEF will once again partner with several other NGOs, including World Vision, the World Food Program, and the Catholic Medical Mission Board, or CMMB, to release dozens of child soldiers. That's according to CMMB. But this is just the beginning of an integration process that involves trauma counseling, psychological support, and assistance for children. Tomorrow, a ceremony to mark the release of some 119 child soldiers will take place in Yambio. The formal release of South Sudanese child soldiers marks the beginning of the healing and reintegration process, according to Catherine Onwarki, Child Protection Manager at CMMB in Yambio.
CMMB works with vulnerable children and their communities in South Sudan to provide psychosocial support services, comprehensive child protection case management services, and also address the gender-based violence issues, as well as raise community awareness on key child protection issues. For example, what constitutes a violation, how they can report it, and to who, and the various child protection actors who can be able to support children be able to access services.
Virginia Gamba, the Secretary General's Special Representative for United Nations Office for Children in Armed Conflict, says community campaigns that increase awareness about the use of child soldiers could help people understand the long-term social and emotional toll it takes on young people. Onwarki agrees.
Members can be trained on how to identify violations of children's rights and where to report confidentially, and how they can seek for support. So if community structures are empowered to seek for this support, they will be of more value in creating an environment that is protective to children because they live within the community structures.
Onwarki says tomorrow's release in Yambio will include 48 girls and 71 boys. UNICEF says both girls and boys are used in support roles like cooking or spying, while others are used in active fighting. Onwarki says girls are frequently used for sexual purposes. Some child soldiers also have to face the stigma of their past from community members who may turn against them or engage in name-calling because they were soldiers.
It is troubling to see that stigma is one of the reasons that reintegration fails to achieve its goals, and therefore community sensitization becomes a very critical area of support for these children who have been affected by armed conflict. In South Sudan, we find that most of the communities are very poor. They have been exposed to conflict, and therefore families sometimes are not ready to support the children who have been associated with armed conflict or child soldiers because they lack the resources or they lack the necessary support to be able to give to these children. And therefore, you find that consideration also of looking at former child soldiers as victims and perpetrators through what they have experienced or committed to their own communities, it also makes them to feel guilty. It's can lead to stress. It can also lead to trauma. And sometimes there is no adequate support within the communities that can offer psychological and mental health services to be able to address the needs of these children.
South Sudan's government denies the use and recruitment of child soldiers, but the Human Rights Watch said it interviewed more than 24 current and former child soldiers in late 2017 in the former Western Equatoria and Unity states. The rights group wrote it had reason to believe that both government and rebel forces have been abducting, detaining, and forcing children as young as the age of 13 into their ranks. Over 900 child soldiers were released in South Sudan last year. Gamba, the UN's representative, said thousands are still out there. That report was prepared for us by Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. An Ethiopian military helicopter carrying 23 passengers on board crashed on Saturday inside the compound of the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei, or UNISFA, killing three crew members on board. The Mi-8 helicopter, with registration number UN039379P, was carrying Ethiopian peacekeepers on rotation from Kadugli to Abyei. 10 peacekeepers were injured, with three in critical condition. UNISFA spokesperson Danielle Adekera says the UN is investigating the cause of the crash. He says the bodies of the three crew members and the injured were evacuated to Addis Ababa yesterday.
So far, three people died. Three of the crew members died, and 10 people were injured, three of them very critical. Both the injured and the deceased have already been repatriated to Addis Ababa. Ethiopia is the sole contributor to UNISFA, so all the passengers involved who were on board were Ethiopian soldiers.
What are the aeroplane experts saying was the cause of this crash?
Well, it would be too early to say what the cause is, because as a mission, we are waiting the arrival of aviation experts from Ethiopia. What our security operatives have done here so far is to safeguard the place so that nobody tampers with the site in order to facilitate investigation. At best, we'll try to put together some preliminary information as to how it happened. But why it happened, that is left to the expert, and it will take a little while when the experts arrive to do the proper investigation.
And what is the reaction of the community in Abyei to this tragic incident? UNISFA has been providing security for the people of Abyei for quite a long time, and when something like that happens, it sends a panic to the community. What is their reaction?
Well, their reaction is that of sympathy. Yesterday, during the ceremony to repatriate the bodies of the fallen peacekeepers, the chief administrator and the paramount chief were present. Thereafter, they mobilized the community to come and pay a condolence visit to UNISFA leadership. They have described the incident as a loss, not just to UNISFA or Ethiopia, but also for Abyei. They have acknowledged the role UNISFA has played in maintaining the peace, and to that extent, whatever happens to UNISFA affects them, and that's why the paramount chief came with some members of the traditional council, some youth groups, civil society, to express their deep sympathy, as it were, to the mission. So the mood in the community is that of sympathy and sharing in the grief that the mission is currently going through.
How is the security situation in Abyei? We've been hearing a lot from there. How is the security situation?
Well, the security situation I would describe as calm.
but unpredictable. We don't have incidents of open confrontation, either from the two communities, nor from other stakeholders. Once in a while, we have cases of banditry and cattle rustling, which has been ongoing for quite some time. So few cases of security breaches are essentially those of criminality and cattle rustling, which is a bit normal, but we don't have cases that will threaten the current security situation in the area.
That's Daniel Adekera, spokesperson of the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei. He was speaking with John Tanza from Abyei this past hour. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. A new chairman of the African Union was elected over the weekend. Find out who it is when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you love most about your family?
The closeness that we have in the family. We are always together. Whenever there is a problem, we come together and handle it together. Each time we have a function, we come together. We are very supportive of each other.
What I love from my family, they are so caring for me. See, I've came to Uganda because of my family. They helped me a lot to pay my school fees, caring for my personal properties. Like, they pay me some cash pocket money to help me.
Well, it's the love and the support. Firstly, the love, because they raised me, basically, and they've been giving me all that I need. You know, they've been there from the start, you know, since from education, they've been helping me out.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. The Wau State Chamber of Commerce says there's been a slight improvement in the area's economic conditions over the past couple of months. The head of the state's Chamber of Commerce says since a local road has reopened, traders have been able to restock food supplies, which has led to lower food prices across the area. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Wau.
Wal Charles Saleu, head of the Wau Chamber of Commerce, says the road linking Juba to Wau via Yambio and Tombra has reopened. Traders are bringing goods into the market across Wau State. Speaking in Arabic, Aleu says security has improved since the River Talaes peace agreement was signed in September, which has contributed to an improved local economy.
Lifestyle of the local citizens has started changing gradually because the local produced food is now available in the market. Things like cassava flour, cassava itself, sweet potatoes and varieties of vegetables in general. All these are now available in the market and life continues.
Aleu says more than 10 trucks transporting food and other goods from Juba via Yambio and Tombra arrived in Wau every day. 27-year-old Edmond William Reneo is a retailer who sells imported food items at Aljo Main Market in Wau. He says, for the past month, food prices have dropped significantly. Speaking in Arabic, William says, many traders prefer to use Tombra Road to bring goods from Juba, while others use Raja Road from neighboring Sudan because both roads are now secure.
These are the two active roads that are now used most. Now our market is full of imported food commodities and local food as well. These days, prices of some basic food have dropped significantly.
William says a month ago, he would buy a 50-kilogram bag of sugar from the wholesalers for 11,000 South Sudanese pounds. Now, it costs 10,000 South Sudanese pounds. William says a 50-kilogram bag of wheat, which used to be cost 12,000 South Sudanese pounds, now sells for 11,000 South Sudanese pounds. And a local produced sack of groundnuts, which sold for 5,000 South Sudanese pounds a month ago, now sells at half price. 58-year-old Wau trader Osman Robok Kamanda says living conditions of Wau residents has improved in recent months. Speaking in Arabic, Kamanda says traders are earning more today because residents who were stranded in the rebel-controlled areas can now come to the town and buy goods.
Citizens do come from Bagari, Farajala, Brinji and Bezia. So there is a lot of movement towards the town because they used to depend on their local food, but now they need imported food. They do bring along with them some food and buy what they need and go back. Since the roads open, the economy situation have changed.
32-year-old Irada Mario, who lives in the Motamadia neighborhood in Wau Town, says, unlike few months ago, she is now able to find all she needs in the market for her family. Speaking in Arabic, Mario says, 3 months ago, she would spend nearly 2,000 South Sudanese pounds to prepare one meal for her family of five. Today, with locally produced items, she says, she spent between 1,200 and 1,500 South Sudanese pounds per day.
Things like okra, charcoal, local sorghum, pineapple, banana, and many things are now available in the market. It's not like before. Now you can spend money and you really know you are spending money on something good.
Traders and citizens in Wau are calling on all parties to the peace agreement to continue implementing it in good faith, so that citizens can live normal lives. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi was elected yesterday as the new chairman of the African Union at the organization's 32nd summit in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, despite his government's poor human rights record. El-Sisi promised to improve peace and security on the continent, but Amnesty International says el-Sisi's chairmanship might undermine the AU's human rights progress so far. Shadrack Gutto, professor emeritus of the University of South Africa, tells my colleague James Buddy that human rights abuses are not specific to one country in Africa.
I think that it is very difficult to find any country in Africa where you don't have some aspect of human rights violations. But some of those violations are also engineered from outside. People who are arming rebels, people who are arming terrorists, people who are arming mercenaries, and they are not from Africa. So I think that the world has to take a broader view and accept that it is part of the problem in Africa. But to be specific to Egypt, I think it is very, very important to understand that Egypt is one of the countries that are considered to be the big five in terms of economic power, but also contributions that are made to the Africa Union to try and sustain it, even though the contributions are not enough.
The theme of this African Union summit now is focusing on refugees. Can you comment on that?
Definitely. What I've just said about the migration of people to seek refuge and asylum in Europe, indeed, there is a problem, but problems are there, and I think we need to deal with it. And if there's no peace and security in each of our countries, and if there's inequality in any of our countries, and there is inequality, even countries that are very rich, I think that we need to deal with the question of the social inequalities, where we have millionaires and even billionaires and trillionaires, but their wealth is kept in Washington, in London, in Switzerland, in France, and so forth. So we have stolen wealth of Africa lying outside of Africa. In fact, a study that was carried out by the AU, which was chaired by the former president of South Africa, Thabo Mbeki, had established that the outflow of resources from Africa is far greater than the so-called donor funds from outside. These are facts, but I believe the continent is really trying to move forward.
That is Shadrack Gutto, Professor Emeritus of the University of South Africa. He was speaking to VOA's James Buddy. A months-old battle over U.S. border security comes to a climax this week as Washington faces a Friday deadline to avoid yet another partial government shutdown. VOA's Michael Bowman reports overshadowing congressional negotiations is President Donald Trump's vague but persistent threat to declare a national emergency if Congress fails to fund wall construction along the U.S.-Mexico border.
Where walls go up, illegal crossings go way, way down. I will get it built.
An unwavering President Donald Trump still at odds with an unwavering House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
There's not going to be any wall money in the legislation.
So far, no deal has been reached by a bipartisan bicameral conference committee tasked with finding a compromise on border security before Friday when U.S. government funding expires once again. But President Trump holds a wild card, his authority as commander-in-chief, to declare a national emergency and bypass Congress altogether. House Republican Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy.
And I don't think anybody questions his legal authority to declare a national emergency.
Democrats like Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer say an emergency declaration is unwarranted and unwise.
It's when the president interferes that there's a problem. So my advice to the president, you don't want to shut down the government. If you don't want to have to declare a national emergency, which I am opposed to and I don't think will happen, stay out of it.
Some powerful Republicans, like Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, are also uneasy.
Because the national emergencies that have been issued in the past have not been contentious. I'm pretty sure that this one would be.
Trump is undeterred, tweeting, quote, "The wall will get built one way or the other." In the abstract, the president's authority to declare a national emergency is not in question. Paul Schiff Berman teaches law at George Washington University.
It turns out that the federal statute books are actually littered with hundreds of places where a president can declare national emergencies in various contexts.
But there is a catch. The situation must be sudden and dire.
A true crisis could be a natural disaster, could be a foreign invasion, something like that, where the need to act quickly was so important that the president would need these national emergency powers because there just wouldn't be enough time for Congress to convene.
Observers like Brookings Institution political analyst John Hudak note, America's border security flaws have been debated for decades.
I think a lot of Americans look at this skeptically and say, what has changed between the beginning of the president's term and now that makes this such a dire emergency?
Trump is expected to explain his thinking later Monday when he visits the border city of El Paso, Texas. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Chol Abye by Abye Jazz Band. We've been listening to a taste of the Abye Jazz Band with the song Chol Abye. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.